Welcome, this is Brian from Brian's Spain Domain, and we are here with Spanish History 101, Episode 6. Sometimes events in history get reduced to ridiculously specific details. I'm talking about years and years of historic moments boiled down to a single fact or image. Take the Punic Wars, for example. It was a conflict that spanned 118 years, was broken down into three wars, totaling 43 years of active hostilities, scores of battles, dozens of major figures, tens of thousands, no, hundreds of thousands of casualties, the utter decimation of a city, and the launching of one of the most important civilizations and empires in world history. And yet, when we think of those wars, at least on a very superficial level, only one of the three comes to mind, the Second Punic War. And of that war, only one person comes to mind, Hannibal, the brilliant general who nearly led the Carthaginians to victory. And of all of his feats, and there were many, only one moment grabs our attention, and that's when he took a battery of elephants over the Alps to invade Italy. It essentially encapsulates the entire conflict. Now, it was certainly a dramatic moment, that's for sure, but often exaggerated. That's also true. And it wasn't the only time elephants were employed. In fact, the Carthaginians used them all the time. But it has somehow become etched in the collective memory of world history. But if you think about it, it was just one part of many moments during that pivotal Second War, and aside from a number of historic battles like Cannae or Zama, so much of it gets overlooked. One of those forgotten histories, unquestionably, is the role ancient Spain was to play, as well as the impact the war would have on this country. And if you think about it, the impact it would have on the rest of Europe overall. Because had the Punic Wars turned out differently, the history of the world most definitely would have unfolded in a totally changed way. It was just that influential. So let's learn a little bit more and see why that is. In the previous episode, we saw how the Phoenicians, and perhaps to a lesser extent the Greeks, made early contact with the different cultures in Spain and made significant contributions in technology, agriculture, architecture, mining, economy, the alphabet, and the arts, to name just a few. The Phoenicians faded away, but they were succeeded by their cousins, the Carthaginians, and they, along with the help of the Etruscans, at least at first, sort of muscled the Greeks out of northern Spain. That left two powers standing in the western half of the Mediterranean, Carthage and a fast-rising nation known as Rome. As opposed to their predecessors, the Phoenicians and the Greeks, these two had greater ambitions in mind in terms of controlling the area, and this meant risking a rise in tensions. For a while there, both the Carthaginians and the Romans tolerated each other, possibly even respected each other. They made trading agreements, and apparently the Carthaginians provided some support to the Romans during the Punic Wars, which was when the Greeks were forced to leave the Italian peninsula for good. But once that was over, and once the Greeks were out of the picture, the powers found themselves in an ever trickier situation. With Rome now controlling the Italian peninsula and Carthage occupying much of Sicily, they were toe-to-toe, face-to-face, staring each other down. A confrontation at some point was all but a done deal. The collision course was set, and the question was where and when. That when came in 264 BCE and the beginning of the First Punic War. This is actually a really interesting conflict, but we're going to avoid getting bogged down with it for one main reason. Most of the fighting takes place on the island of Sicily, and Spain, while under the influence of Carthage, for the most part, is also, for the most part, out of the picture here. But we should mention a few important points. Carthage was in control of most of Italy at the beginning, while the eastern coast of that island was controlled by local kings. Through a series of events that we won't get into, for the sake of brevity, Rome takes it upon itself to defend these kingdoms and, in passing, use it as an excuse to challenge Carthage itself. The war lasts much longer than either side expects, they often do, and it would take 23 exhausting and costly years to bring to an end. The result, Rome won and took control of Sicily, Corsica, and Sardinia, three major spheres of influence for Carthage, and Carthage also had to pay a hefty indemnity, or reparations, to Rome. So, even though Iberia had no role in the first war, it is the result that would change everything for it, because when the Carthaginians gave up their possessions on those islands, they moved further west and consolidated their control in large parts of the Iberian Peninsula. They did this through conquest in part, and also partly through treaties. Both systems involved the Iberian tribes and in some cases the Celts. This process was accelerated by the arrival of the Barsid clan onto Spanish soil. This was a Carthaginian family that would have a major presence in the known political and military world of the time, and especially Spain. Their aim, well, in part to recover some of Carthage's prestige, strengthen its interest in the West, and finally ensure a supply of silver, which, as we have mentioned in previous episodes, Spain was a major source of. The patriarch of the family was a man named Hamilcar Barca. Hamilcar was an excellent military strategist and both efficiently handled the Celts and the Iberians and secured control over the eastern half of Iberia. First, he subdued the people who used to be known as the Tartessians near Cadiz. Then he went up toward what would be today Seville and took on the Turdetanos. And from there eastward, he defeated the Bastetanos and other tribes until he settled in what would be today the city of Alicante. All of this took place between 237 and 230 BCE. During his final campaigns, he continued to consolidate control over the territories north and west of Alicante. It was at this time that they also founded a second major port in 227 BCE called Carthadasht, which meant new city. A few years later, the Romans would give it a new name, Carthago Nova, which meant new Carthage, modern-day Cartagena. To this day, Cartagena remains one of the major ports in the Mediterranean. Now, all this activity roused suspicion in Rome. Just what were the Carthaginians up to? At the time, however, if there was any thought about socking it out on the battlefield again, neither side was willing or able to do it. Rome itself was involved in conflicts with local tribes in Sardinia and Corsica, and let's be honest with ourselves, Rome was in no shape for another war. The cost of the First Punic War, both economically and in terms of manpower, had been horrific. Some sources claim of up to 20% of the male population had been killed. They would have to wait a generation or two to be able to rebuild and take on a major rival. The same pretty much went for the Carthaginians. Little did they know that the next time they'd clash, it would be 10 times worse. Hamilcar died in 228. Some sources say he was killed in battle, others say he drowned in the Júcar River in Spain under the weight of his own armor, possibly during a skirmish. The charismatic leader not only left Carthage with plenty of new territory and renewed pride, he also bequeathed his family and his people with a genuine hatred of Rome and the Roman people. It marked a notable shift from the Carthaginians' previous relationship with their neighbors and trading rivals. In any event, his son-in-law, Hasdrubal, took over, but his own sons were in charge of the military. The Second Punic War was triggered by the siege of an Iberian city called Saguntum. I bet you didn't know that. Which was located about 30 kilometers north of present-day Valencia. Saguntum was a small city-state, a prosperous one, and it had an alliance with Rome. It fell to the Carthaginians in 219 BCE and was sacked. By this time, 25 years had gone by since the First Punic War, and the Romans had recovered and were ready to rumble. They declared war and prepared to retaliate. At first, it seemed they planned on heading to North Africa and attacking Carthage itself and settling the matter in its origin. But then Hannibal did something that no one in the right mind would have even thought of doing, let alone carry out. He took an entire army, which included the famous pack of elephants, and he led them over the Alps and into the Italian peninsula. It was so daring, so brazen, so stupid, thought some, that the Romans couldn't believe their eyes. They had to cancel their expedition to the north of Africa and deal with the intruder. We now know that they were in for the shock of their lives. Now, Hannibal's thrashing of Roman army after Roman army is now well known and well documented. He took them to their cleaners relentlessly. It was no contest, or at least so it seemed. The Romans may have broken a record for consecutive military humiliations, but you have to hand it to them, they were resilient fighters, managing to muster new legions to throw at them over and over again. For years, Hannibal wreaked havoc on Italy, but he couldn't manage to finish the job. After 15 years, both Hannibal and his troops became frustrated and morale began to break down. Cornered in the southern part of Italy, he and his army slipped away and returned to Carthage. Now, most teachers focus the story of the Punic War on the generals' campaigns in Italy, and we get the sense that Rome was backed into a corner and fighting for its life as a nation. And while that may have been partly true, there's no denying that Rome still had plenty of punch left in it. In fact, what many overlook is that at the very time Hannibal was devastating the Roman forces, Rome itself had sent its own expeditions to do the same in other parts of the Mediterranean, in Sardinia, Corsica, and Sicily. And of course, New Carthage's very own backyard, Iberia. Yes, Iberia. And practically right from the beginning. So this was almost like total war. Every theater was engaging in battle. This took place in 218 BCE, and the force was led by a Roman named Gnaeus Cornelius Scipio Calvus, who is not to be confused with his younger brother, Publius Cornelius Scipio, or Publius's son, famous son, Publius Cornelius Scipio Africanus, one of the greatest military leaders of all time, but we'll get to him in a second. On the Carthaginian side was Hannibal's younger brother, Hasdrubal, who was commissioned with the task of defending Iberia. Gnaeus Cornelius arrived in what is today Catalonia and landed in a position that split the Carthaginian armies in two. His first engagement was at the Battle of Sissa near Tarraco, or present-day Tarragona. It turned out to be a rout for the Carthaginians, that is, they were routed. Then a year later, in 217, there was a naval battle in the mouth of the Ebro River, which also resulted in a convincing loss for the Carthaginians. They lost 75% of their vessels. And then in 215, another battle near the banks of the Ebro called the Battle of Dertosa, near modern-day Tortosa, ended with a third victory. So it was a pretty good start for the Romans. Another consequence of these setbacks for the Carthaginians was the fact that Hasdrubal could not head over to Italy and provide some backup for his brother. He would have to put it off until a later date, and that was not what Hannibal wanted to hear. Additional bad news came when thousands of Iberians and Celts deserted them and joined up with the Romans, the exact opposite of what had happened to Rome's allies during Hannibal's invasion. That was a bad sign for the Carthaginians, but not all hope was lost. Gnaeus was slow to launch an assault on the rest of Iberia. He would wait until 212 BCE when he was joined by his brother Publius Scipio. Together, they invaded the southeastern part of modern Spain, but they soon ran into trouble. Hasdrubal had another army who was reinforced by Mago, his younger brother, and his forces. They also counted on the support of the feared Numidian cavalry and Iberian forces, so not all of the Iberians had defected and joined the Romans. Many stayed with Carthage. The major conflict was actually a series of battles, and it came to be known as the Battle of Upper Baetis. The Carthaginians were victorious this time, and both Roman generals, that is, both brothers, were killed. Carthage had a chance to finish the job off, but it showed restraint. That would turn out to be a big mistake because in 209, Publius's son arrived to take over. He was just 25 years old at the time, but he was on the verge of initiating a military career that would go down in history as one of the greatest of all time. He was also probably the only leader who could match Hannibal's talent and genius. We are talking about none other than Publius Cornelius Scipio Africanus, or simply Scipio Africanus. Scipio marched right at the heart of Carthage's power base in Iberia and laid siege to New Carthage in 209. 2 months later, the city fell. He also engaged with the Carthaginians in a battle known as Berluca, which took place somewhere in the north of Andalusia in the province of Jaen. There, Scipio defeated Hasdrubal and the Carthaginians, but not decisively. Hasdrubal managed to escape and then launched a second invasion of Italy to support Hannibal. It was the one he had planned on doing years before but got delayed. The problem is, Hannibal didn't know he was coming. The Romans met Hasdrubal at the Battle of the Metaurus River in 207, where he died and his army lost. That battle would turn out to probably be the most decisive of all in the entire war, as it left Hannibal isolated and without hope of taking Rome, and it also left Iberia, that is Spain, practically undefended. There was one more chance for the Carthaginians to turn things around, and that came in a battle outside of present-day Seville. It's known as the Battle of Ilippa, and it was said to be possibly Scipio Africanus' greatest victory, tactically speaking. The Roman leader practically wiped out the Carthaginian force under Hannibal's brother Mago. And with that, Iberia fell under Roman control. Well, not really, but we'll get to that at a later time. The rest of the war would move to northern Africa and the territory surrounding Carthage, and Scipio and Hannibal would finally face each other at the legendary Battle of Zama, which finished the Carthaginians off. The city would be sacked and razed. The Third Punic War would come a few years later. It was much briefer and would take place almost exclusively around Carthage. Spain by that time had come under the control of Rome. The Romans had come to Iberia as a kind of liberating force, but once they got there, they soon realized the enormous potential of the land. But if you think that the locals were going to accept their presence kindly, you've got another thing coming to you. Rome still had a long way to go before it could say it had the situation under control and stabilized. Many years of struggle before that famous process known as Romanization would go into full swing. It's a fantastic part of Spain's early history, which we will have to tell you about in the next episode. For now, just recall that the famous Punic Wars, especially the Second Punic War, had a major impact both directly and indirectly on the history of Spain. To begin with, we'll start with the name the Romans had for the territory, a name that would evolve into its current form. Let's see if you recognize it. Hispania. And that'll be it for today's podcast from Brian's Spain Domain. If you have any questions or comments, please leave them with us. We love the feedback. You can follow us on Spotify and Castos, or if you wish to support us, check us out on Patreon. Stay safe and well, and hasta pronto.